So they say back in the Isles, that's the UK, England, Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Wales. There's an expression, Kevin, which goes like this. It's the hope that kills you.
Ooh.
And that's a
Yeah.
little bit how I feel right now about the Tom Herman regime, his time at Texas, and the OU game we just had. It's the hope that kills you.
It is the hope that kills you. I gotta say, though, even heading into that game, I think for both of us and a lot of Texas fans, there was little hope there. Now, maybe there was hope to win the football game. I picked them to win a coin toss because of all the issues that was going on with Oklahoma. We'll get into the macro and the lack of hope or what's left of the hope with Tom Herman and his regime. But let's get into the actual game because the hope went away as that thing was going on. Another really bad third quarter. Another question about adjustments. And I guess just a lot of questions about this coaching staff and team in general. I mean, the personnel is not where we were hoping it would be, speaking of hope, or maybe thought it would be. But you got to mix that in with schemes and coaching and just general sloppiness and lack of discipline, and that does fall back on the coaching staff. And we're now in year number four. He's 1-3 in the Red River Shootout. He's 1-4 against Oklahoma. If he was ever going to get Lincoln Riley and get the Sooners, it was going to be last Saturday.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know what? Oklahoma was every bit as bad as we thought they were.
Yeah. I mean, no, what if I would have told you, Paul? What if I would have told you? What if I would have told you?
What if I were to tell you?
What if I told you that I've got interest rates that, no, that it that Spencer Rattler, and we had talked about it, he will give you some stuff, and he gave Texas some stuff, but he actually hadn't been as bad maybe as the just kind of average football fan that doesn't watch a lot would think. He was maybe their best offensive player heading into the game. If I would have told you his performance was so bad that Lincoln Riley had to pull him, then you're really thinking Texas has to find a way to win this, right?
Look, you go back to visit me. You discover time travel. Instead of using your amazing gift to shape the world for better,
Right.
you use it to go back in time and tell me about a football score, which is probably what you would do.
No shit.
Hey, Paul, no shit. I'm from the future. 4 days. Hey, man, Spencer Rattler averages 6.3 yards per attempt, and OU had three turnovers, and they benched him. Do you think we win? And
Now,
I'd be like, yeah, we won by 21. And you're like, ha-ha, we lose.
we lose. In
And then
fairness,
disappear.
I would have done that, but I would have met you in Vegas just to make sure we're okay.
There you go. That's the Kevin that I like. Exactly.
Yes.
We would have made a couple of – we would have bet the Aggies over Florida. We would have bet
Right.
OU over Texas. We would have had a pick, you know, we would have had a special parlay bet for Justin Herbert to throw four touchdowns against the Saints, right?
Yeah.
Like, we would have combined all those bets, and then we would have really put that to good use.
We
But
would have bet more. We would have bet more on craps than we ever have in our life. Just trust me on this, Paul.
exactly. Oh man. Well, yeah. I tell you what. Should we talk about the defense first?
Yeah.
The Texas defense.
Yeah. Let's start with the defense that actually kept this team in it in the second half.
Well, here's the crazy thing. We suspect, you know, Herman, obviously, I mean, oh my God, we'll cover the post-game quotes, which are
Oof.
damning, to
Yeah.
say the least, right? Particularly the one where Herman says, "It's a shame that we have to go fast in order to have a good offense."
I know. I mean, like it's almost that's something that a dominant offense with dominant personnel and really damn good coaching would say, you know what? We were playing UTEP and we should have been able to just run basic outside zone and smash their ass, but we couldn't. No, this is a Texas team that had talked about using tempo as part of what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, Herman believes at some deep level that going fast is shameful.
Right.
It's this, I mean, and it ties in with the tortoise turtle motif.
Right.
Right? He
Yeah.
doesn't want to be the hare. He doesn't want to be the rabbit. And he believes in going slow.
I know. No, he's all about the turtle unless he plays him.
God, yeah. Well, you know, no turtle wants to upend a terrapin. Terrapins are at the top of the turtle food chain.
This
right?
is true. So, this is true.
Look, we're going offline here, but the Texas defense did keep Texas in the game. They did some good things. They did some not good things.
Yep.
But what's crazy is that OU, because Lincoln Riley lost confidence in his quarterback. There's no discussion about that. He benched the guy for a quarter, right? But he ball controlled us. That freaking guy ground us down.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma ended up running 97 plays, didn't average over 5 yards per play. And the entire game, Kevin, Oklahoma did not complete a pass down the field. They didn't throw it over our heads one time.
No, it was not the Hollywood Brown, oh my God, throwback. How did we give up something that wide open? No, they actually didn't pick on the cornerbacks as much as I thought they were going to. And that may be, I think that's partially because of what Lincoln sees on the outside for him right now. Mims looks like their most talented receiver, and he's a youngster. But I think a lot of it had to do with how the game was going. And it showed that Lincoln Riley can actually, you know, in different ways, use his offense and his brain to actually win a game. And that's exactly what he did. They also got their run game back. I mean, Paul, the last thing we said, we probably said it four times during the podcast last week, is that you've got to start with taking away what Oklahoma hasn't had and what we know makes them go under Lincoln Riley. And that's the run game. And I don't have the stats in front of you, but I think they ran for 208.
They did. And unfortunately, Pledger, their third string running back, dropped like 130 yards on us at over 6 yards a carry. That was the first 100-yard game from an OU back this season. And it's the GT counter. And they show it on film. You've got to have a plan for it. Obviously, they're very good at it. They do a bunch of different play action and different stuff off of it. But you know what? OU didn't have the ability to threaten us down the field like they typically do with their play action game. And they weren't getting a really easy pocket for Spencer Rattler to sit in. And when he got pressure, particularly early, he was panicking. And, you know, the game was a little too big for him. To his credit, Rattler did settle down and made some big throws, particularly in the overtime. But the bummer is, repeatedly in high leverage situations, the Texas defense, which did some very good things, just didn't come up in the red zone, in the overtime period. OU just kept getting scores when they needed scores. And if you make one stop there, you can change the outcome of the game.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I guess the counter thing is frustrating because this is not something new. This is not the little shovel pass, shovel pass that he pulled off the week before in the loss to Iowa State that you thought, okay, Lincoln's always going to have a wrinkle or two. This is kind of their base run game.
That's about as OU as you'll ever see vanilla. That's about as vanilla as you'll ever see OU be.
Yeah, it's also about as OU will be under Lincoln Riley as you started.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And here's the crazy thing. As good as we did in some areas, and by the way, I've got to praise the cornerbacks. You know, we have put a lot of heat as Texas fans and critiques on Texas corners over the last few years. And these guys came up big. Josh Thompson played really well. I thought Deshaun Jameson did some beautiful things, had an incredible strip where he played the ball in the end zone and deprived Charleston Rambo of a touchdown.
Yep.
He had some very good one-on-one coverage deep where he didn't have any safety help at all. Green got beat on a couple of plays, but if you go back and look at those throws, they were fantastic throws, and he had excellent coverage. You sort of just have to tip your cap. This is the best game we've seen from Texas corners to date that I can recall. And it's like we wasted it. And we wasted it by having OU exploit us in some very predictable ways that you think that we would have had some sort of answer for. And I think it showed us some of the limitations of the linebacker core. And I think it just showed us some of the limitations that we have across the team in terms of leadership. Look, you know, Captain Caden Stearns did not play in the game, and he padded up and he said he couldn't go and, you know, didn't participate in the game. I think there were some key moments where they certainly could have used him.
Yeah. Is this one of those, are we going to be two old men here that you got to give it a go unless the leg's falling off?
I think you might want to give it a go. And if you can't play, then
the
they can get you out of there.
Right. Yeah. And look, there were obviously Texas had other problems with injuries with at the safety spot. So I think it only adds to your point that the cornerbacks did their job, did not have a lot of help with them, knew they didn't have seven Caden Stearns to even start that thing off. But Oklahoma wasn't really going to go after that. I mean, you look at it, Theo Weiss, 8 catches, but for 52 yards. Mims, 4 catches, but for 52. Really, I mean, there wasn't one guy. Stogner led them in yards with 6 catches for 56, but you kind of know what they're going to do with him as a tight end. This seemed like it allowed Texas to be able to stop the run. They couldn't do it. You mentioned kind of attacking Texas when Jett Bush was in there, that they went after him and went after him right away. I guess one of the questions we've had on the afternoon show is, why wouldn't Osai in there enough? It felt like he was getting more time off than what would just be like a blow for someone. I know it was humid, it was hot, but there were a couple drives he started off and he wasn't in there. It gets back to managing your personnel, which has been a question under Tom Herman the whole time.
Yeah, specifically the third quarter OU 17 play 87-yard drive that took over 8 minutes off the clock.
Yep.
I mean, Bill Parcells watched that drive with an enormous hard-on. Right? That was the 1990 New York Giants, right?
And it was Lincoln Riley, the guy who likes to score in the time of a fart. I mean, his ideal drive is 2 plays, 80 yards in 30 seconds.
Yeah, specifically that drive, Osai got worn out or they subbed in for him, and they had Jett Bush in there for something like 11 or 12 of the last 17 plays.
Yeah, Riley knew it too.
Yep, he did. And you know what? Jett goes out there and he plays hard. He gives it all. I think he's actually probably playing out of position. I think he might secretly be the answer or some help at inside linebacker. I also thought this was a Court Jaquist game. I really do. With what OU was doing and their willingness to play the game inside of a phone booth.
Right.
And not spread the field and run a lot of that GT counter. I thought Jaquist was the perfect antidote to that. At least he's physical. He can get after it at the point of attack. Juwan Mitchell, boy, he's credited with 10 tackles in the box score, but he had a poor game. And I can tell you that just from focusing in on him. And I got to say, it wasn't as bad as TCU in some key moments, but I saw some what-the-hell moments from the defense and from Chris Ash. And it tied in with what you're talking about with personnel management. Obviously, you do have to give Osai a rest, but you've got to pick those critical moments at an opportune time. And similarly, I don't know if you saw this, Kevin. I wrote about it on Inside Texas in my post-game, post-mortem. Juwan Mitchell was in a four-point stance over the center for Spencer Rattler's fourth down quarterback sneak touchdown.
Yeah. I didn't see it live. I saw it on replay.
Yeah. Now, I'm not an expert, but you might want to have across guard, center, guard, you might want to have that be Sweat, Coburn, Graham.
Yeah, you think?
You think? I mean, I'm not a physicist, but Creed Humphrey weighs about 325 and Juwan Mitchell weighs 230. And if it's a quarterback sneak, I know what's going to happen there. And by the way, Spencer Rattler didn't do a good quarterback sneak.
No.
So if you get a lack of penetration, if you prevent the offensive lineman from getting pushed, or you just get even a little penetration, I think actually Texas holds up there. So that kind of blew me away. And then I don't know if you noticed this, but early in the game, OU had that really nice concept where they ran Mim against the grain on the 30-yard touchdown pass where he popped wide open.
Yep.
And they saw that. They put it in their pocket, kind of shades of TCU with the quarterback empty set draw. Not quite as egregious, right? But shades of it. In that overtime, that's what they threw to Drake Stoops for that 25-yard touchdown. I was wondering if you caught that.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily catch that was what they're scheming off of in terms of the Mims touchdown live, but going back and looking at it, yeah, I mean, it kind of rings, and it gets back to not only halftime adjustments, but whoever your eyes are upstairs, being able to recognize stuff. So you can actually have a play go for 80 yards. You can have a play go the other way and it's a pick six or a fumble. a lot of times there's something that someone upstairs is seeing, whether it's a safety, a corner, a linebacker being too aggressive or whatever, and you say, let's put that in our back pocket. It's going to work. And Oklahoma did that there.
Yeah, and it's the second time, and maybe I'm being hypersensitive to this, but this is the second time in a row in a key moment where we've seen a team line up in a certain way, run a certain concept, get a good result, put it in their pocket, and then spring it on us again when they most needed it.
Right.
And we didn't pick up on it. We didn't make the adjustment. So
yeah, well, that's a good point you bring up, too, because that's not only the Oklahoma coaches up there. That's up to the Texas defensive coaches, whatever eyes you have up there. And there are a lot of them saying, hey, we need to watch out because that was wide-ass open, and they're smart enough to bring that back.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Well, look, I thought the Texas defense in many ways did some good things. They did some less good things. But, boy, if you had had a reasonable offensive performance by Texas – Texas wins this game, or at least a consistent offensive performance. So do we want to talk about the Texas Sam Ellinger? I should say Texas offense there, but it was the Texas Sam Ellinger.
Yeah, it was. Well, here, can we get to the positives first?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Bring it.
They only gave up three less sacks than they did last year to Oklahoma. Sorry, that's not. I'm being a smartass there. Yeah,
that's 9 versus 6.
Yeah, it's 9 versus 6.
That is a significant reduction. At this rate, Kevin, we will give up 0 sacks in 2022.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm guessing that you love to play a lot of yard football, right? I loved yard football.
Of course.
And there's something about yard football that at the end of the day, it's just usually a quarterback scrambling around and either taking off or trying to find someone who's not on his initial route. And it's that chaos drill that Texas doesn't run that well. It helps the receivers to help out with that. But that was the best offensive play for Texas. It was Sam on passing plays, looking down, and OU was rerouting the receivers. They continued to press and jam and reroute, and it threw off a lot of the timing to go with Texas doesn't have special enough receivers or good enough receivers to really separate. So it was Sam just taking off. Am I wrong? Was that not the most effective play for Texas?
Yeah, that was it. And look – I got to say, Kevin, in the coach's defense, who could have predicted that OU and Alex Grinch would run press man coverage on third down and combine it with a bunch of line stunts? Now, that's just out of the blue. I'm not going to hold the coaches accountable for that. How in God's name are they supposed to know that OU is going to do that?
Oh, yeah, because they never run any games or stunts, right? I mean, you never see that. Rod Babers had talked about it. He's like, look, OU's defense before the game doesn't do anything well. You've got to go up and jam and press. I mean, that could have been foreseen, correct?
It was foreseen because they ran exactly the same game plan as they ran last year.
Yes, it was the exact same thing. It's what they do.
Same plan that they run against every team they play. And they ran exactly the same game plan that Alex Grinch has run ever since he was at Washington State.
Yes, that's what he did there. I mean, it's unbelievable to – it's almost one of those where they're not expecting it because it's so obvious. They need to start expecting the obvious and then also having – plans and being able to prepare for other things that come with it. But, yeah, it's frustrating. Let's start with the receivers there. I mean, these just aren't that good of receivers. That's kind of it, right?
Well, you know, maybe not. But there are different types of receivers and different types of ways that you can use them. And there is something in the world called man beaters.
Yes.
And man beaters are a bunch of routes that everyone universally agrees on from, oh, I don't know, the junior high level up through the NFL. These are the routes that are most advantageous against man coverage. And by the way, OU's coverage guys are average.
Oh, no, they're not good.
They started a true freshman out of frustration because they put in Eaton, right? Because one of their guys wasn't doing what they wanted. So let's not pretend that this isn't Parnell Motley, much less Deion Sanders out there.
Right, so, and Motley is not fantastic either, but he's more talented than the guys they put out there.
That's exactly right, and the problem was we did not schematically prepare to beat man coverage. You need to be running mesh. You need to be running slants, slant and go. You need to be running rub routes. You need to be doing all sorts of stuff. Some of it illegal. Make the official throw the flag. Whatever. I don't care. You got to do things to get them running, not just in a straight line and playing the eyes of the quarterback because your receiver can't get open. And God help me, if I see Brennan Eagles at 230 pounds struggling to get off press coverage from a 180-pound guy, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, well, you saw it. Now, Tom Herman did say he was impressed with Yursich, that he made the adjustment to go to crossing routes. How are those crossing routes not in there if you know exactly what they're going to do? And obviously, crossing routes and getting people caught in traffic and legal rub routes, I mean, hell, just look at Oklahoma. That's obviously a great way to beat man.
Of course it is. And here's the other thing. How many carries did Sam Ellinger have last year against OU?
I don't know.
23.
Okay.
He had 20. You know how many carries he had against OU this year?
23.
23!
Yeah. And a lot of those weren't designed because of how shitty the play call was or not getting open, whatever it was.
Absolutely not. And the greatest thing was, whenever you could see Yursich was out of ideas, they would just do a called run with Sam to get 4 yards so he could, like, think for 30 seconds.
Yeah, just
right?
Give me a breath.
Give me a breath. So here's what's crazy. Ellinger ended up, Texas ran 87 plays against OU. He was the primary on 76 of the 87 plays.
Unbelievable.
Sorry?
I said unbelievable. I don't think Vince or Colt was that big of the offense.
I researched this. They weren't. It is the greatest one. It is the worst and the greatest one-man gang effort in the history of Texas football.
Wow.
87.2% of the offense went through Sam Ellinger.
So I guess
23 carries, 53 throws.
So I guess it is kind of fitting he was by himself after the game.
Oh, my God. So that's 76 plays, to put a little context. Talk about a one-man gang, Vince Young in the Rose Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Everyone agrees that's one of the greatest one-man gang performances of all time.
Right.
59 plays. That's 19 runs, 40 throws. Sam ran the ball more and threw the ball more, and he was a higher percentage of the total number of plays.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We're back to his freshman year, Kevin.
No, we are. It's regressed to that. And also, Sam is – he's not like he was his freshman year. He obviously takes care of the ball better, but he hasn't been nearly as accurate. I mean, even when there is a pocket and even when someone is open on a couple of those crossing routes, there were balls – and we've seen this majority of the year – that were low, behind the receiver. It's almost like all the other stuff, and I don't want to make excuses for him because he may just not be playing at the level he was, but when you ask someone to do so much, you expect them to be at that 98-99, you know, percent level, and they may even drop to 85 or 90. Man, it really shows when you're not getting help from the outside.
Well, usage rate is a thing, and it's not just a mental burden, but it's a physiological burden.
Yeah.
And when you're running your quarterback, he takes hits. I mean, he's a big, tough kid, but he's getting hit. And getting hit a lot does not help your throwing. And that's not to make an excuse because, by the way, he threw the ball poorly early in the game when he did have some opportunities. But I think those opportunities were highlighted in the sense that if you and I were out doing a hike and we were hiking in Yosemite – and there's waterfalls everywhere and water everywhere, and we stop, and I take my canteen or my water skin, and I pour a bunch on my hair, you'd be like, ah, that feels good, doesn't it? If we were on the desert, and you saw me do that, you'd be like,
you
moron,
yeah,
what are you doing?
I'd kick you in the nuts.
That's right. Sam, we had so few clear opportunities that when we did miss one, I think it got heightened in our perception.
I think that's
like,
yes.
Oh, he missed that throw. Oh, that was the game. Yep. You know, how could he not hit that? Hey, man, you should have 15 or 20 moments a game where Sam has the opportunity to make an open throw, not four.
Excellent point. Excellent point. And I think that highlights kind of what's going on right there. You're right that whenever because the opportunities are few and far between, that when he does get an open guy, it's like, oh, man, you have to be perfect there. And he wasn't. Let's get to the run game here a little bit. You mentioned Sam, 23 carries, 112 yards. Bijan Robinson, 5 carries, 17 yards. Keontae Ingram, 3 carries, 15 yards. Roshan Johnson.
And a fumble.
Yeah, and a fumble. Roschon, 3 carries, -3 yards. I think I mentioned it to you last week a little bit in the podcast. You know, you talk about the GT counter, and when I watch other run games, they're creative. It's not the same thing. You can have your base. Look, it's a zone read, outside zone scheme. That's what our base is going to be. That's going to be primarily what we run. I almost feel like the Texas coaching staff thinks their offensive line, specifically the right side, but I mean all four of them, and I say all four because Cosme, everything I've seen was okay, but Engelau had a rough game. Kerstetter's a better fit at right tackle, and then the right side is a complete shit show. They do know they're not Alabama, that they're going to have to be a little bit more creative with run schemes, correct?
Yeah, I think that's correct. And not only that, the run scheme we're running is not very good.
No.
It's not well executed. The steps aren't timed up with the running back. The steps at the offensive linemen, their pass-offs, how they're conducting it, the depth they take, the angles they take, their pad level, it's all bad. Everything's bad. It's all bad.
Yeah.
And I understand that offensive line play takes some time to cohere. I understand it can be a work in progress. I've seen no work in progress.
No.
So don't tell me about a work in progress if I don't see any work.
Yeah, I think it's pretty evident that there should have been at least 8 coaches that were replaced last year. And
maybe 9.
Maybe, yeah, fair enough. Maybe 9 and maybe the whole damn thing. But the fact that Herb Hand is back and they had the issues with the games the defensive linemen were playing, you know, really starting last year in the second half of West Virginia, but it was completely illustrated or highlighted in the 9 sacks against Oklahoma. That hasn't gotten any better. And then the run game's not there. I'm not sure what the hell he's giving us outside of some grilling tips on his on social media.
Yeah, Herman gives us grills and Hand gives us grilling.
Yeah, he does a good job with that. I'll give him that. I've learned some stuff.
Here's the killer about the offensive line. These are supposed to be your big reliables. These are the foundation of your team. They're the steady guys. They're not flakes. They're not idiots. They don't do a lot of dumb things, right? You don't have to manage them. These are big, solid guys who are dutiful and loyal. And if you know offensive linemen, they're like the most self-deprecating, funny, usually
yeah,
guys on a football team.
They're like
the most tight.
They're like a good farm dog. No ego.
No ego. They just want to work. And every now and then you give them a little scratch behind the ear and they're happy. Derek Kerstetter is that dude, right?
Right.
He had a really dumb personal foul that cost us 4 points, right?
Yeah.
We would traded what would have been a touchdown for a field goal. Junior Engelau, he had a terrible play that had that hold in the fourth overtime that creates first and goal from the 19.
Ugh.
He also had the hold on 4th and 2 when Texas is going to go for it and get points before the half.
He also got blown up on the blocked field goal. That was him that got blown up.
Yes, he did. And I think the trajectory on that, I couldn't tell because I rewatched it. The trajectory looked a little low, but he gave up too much penetration. So I don't know what's going on with these guys. And it's very unoffensive lineman-like.
Yeah.
Like these aren't the mistakes your offensive line should be making.
No, it's not. But going back to Charlie and even late Mac, and you could kind of go through almost all of Mac, but when Mac was struggling, you know, we've had a penchant here at UT to get guys that have a much higher higher thought of themselves than they should. And some of that may be coming from the coaching. Some of that may be, as we talk about, when you get a ride to Texas, all of a sudden you think you're maybe you've come farther than you actually have and that you're actually just starting to really – you should be starting to really work and get after it. But I just get that sense, and it kind of bleeds to the offensive line where they're not that good and you just don't – I don't know. It's frustrating, man.
Yeah, and you made a very good point. I had real reservations about it, but you sort of have to trust the coaches because they're seeing it every day, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, why do you want to break up Kerstetter and Cosme as your bookends when we know that they're one of the most effective pass-blocking pair of tackles in the Big 12 and college football?
And by the way, that's not Paul and I saying that. If you look at analytics, college PFF, Pro Football Focus, they do a good job. They had Kerstetter rated as one of the best offensive tackles in the country last year.
Yeah, in terms of pass-blocking effectiveness, he
yes,
was grading in the 90s. And Cosme wasn't grading much further behind. Nakazmi's run block grade was really high, which is why he's, you know, a potential first or second round draft pick. But I understand Texas doesn't have a center that they trust, but it's year four.
Yeah.
You should have a center that you trust.
Yeah. No, you should. And Jake Majors was a guy that I said a couple weeks ago, I told you after Tech, I said, man, with the right side of the line, they got to open that thing up. And if Jake Majors can give you anything in there, move Kerstetter to right tackle, try and figure out a right guard, and try and protect. I understand that you're very vulnerable up the middle, and you do not want to get blown up the middle. It's why a center does so many different things, too, with calls and protections and all that. So Majors may not be there, but it does get back to your point. It's year four. And it's year four in 2020 when you can go get grad transfers. Go get some center from Northwestern and just fill him in there.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's year four, and if Herman wants to create a reality of physicality and running the ball and controlling the clock and all that, okay. But we're not.
Yeah.
And so you've had 4 years. If you can't create your desired reality, if you can't fulfill at least a portion of your vision so that we can see that there is a future here, it's the hope that kills you. And that hope has passed for any thinking Texas fan.
It has. He's really lost the centrist. And those are the ones that I always look at. I look at maybe because I'm that, so this may be, you know, me blowing myself or just saying, oh, you know, people I really trust are people like me and think like me. You know, I try and get outside my own box, but whether it's politics or sports, I mean, if you're the edge prisoner of the moment person on either side of both those, I mean, I always kind of take it with a grain of salt. He's lost the people that actually have some sense and will not flip out after a spring game. He's lost them. And you can talk about donors, and we can talk about some of the other stuff, but just the fan that doesn't have anything to do with paying his contract or getting him out of that contract, those are the people I kind of, you know, always will listen to and watch and look at. There's actually a couple of them on social media. He's lost them. And to me, my experience following this program forever and following really any coaching job, that's when you're screwed.
Well, and I'll say this, you and I have a decent network which covers a range of Longhorn fans,
yes,
ranging from regular guys like you and me,
yep,
who follow the Horns, and you and I may have more info, or we may follow them more closely because of what we do.
But we're not writing a check.
Well, yeah, we're not writing checks. They don't, at the end of the day, they don't give a crap what we think.
No.
We can go pound sand, right?
Right.
But we also know some guys who do write checks.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know some guys who are influencers.
Yeah.
And I can tell you the level of rage, the level of anger from those guys is like nothing I've ever seen. Maybe John Makovic.
Makovic's the one, although I wasn't talking to those guys because they didn't have the money back then. But I think Makovic would be one. Parts of Charlie, I mean, but Charlie almost became so obvious so early that it was like, how do we get this done?
But Kevin, Charlie was a dog that had a debilitating disease you knew you were going to have to put down, but
yeah,
you didn't feel good about it.
Yeah, you got to take him out back and fire away or take him into the vet. But yeah, you didn't feel good about it, but you knew it had to be done.
Well, I can tell you, I don't know a single Texas person. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. Do you know a single Texas person in your network, close, extended, or medium, or otherwise, that identifies as, I'm a Tom Herman guy?
No. I mean, not a Tom Herman guy. There are people like me, and I think you, that really felt like it was a good hire and that he was going to be the guy to make it work. But no one who says, I'm a Herman guy. And some of that may be on Herman. I do know a lot of those donors, or at least the people I talked to in my sphere, were really pissed off the way he handled stuff over the summer and with the eyes of Texas. And even people that were like, hey, it's okay, it's cool if we don't sing it, but it's the way that was handled by him. I felt like he lost some people there. Is that unfair?
Well, no, they should have been pissed off, intimating that a significant portion of your fan base and your influential fan base who writes a lot of your checks
are racist.
Is racist.
Yeah.
Is probably not a great thing. I understand who he's trying to speak to, he's trying to win favor and curry favor with his players with that sort of statement. But what he's actually doing is creating a series of divisions, and he's getting all the BBs out of the box. He's doing us against them.
Yeah.
And that ain't going to work out for you. And first of all, it's not good leadership. A good leader does not throw the people that are both his peers or people above him in some ways under the bus to curry favor with his men.
Right.
You do that in a military environment. You do that in a corporate environment. You're done.
Yeah.
Because your underlings and subordinates at that moment, they may go, yay.
He's got our back.
About 10 minutes later, they don't trust you.
No, because you'll do that same thing to them and they know it.
That's exactly right. And that is leadership 101. Saving Private Ryan, right?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks, there's a funny part where they finally, after the Normandy landing, they're walking in and looking for Private Ryan, and someone's complaining. And someone says something to the effect of, sir, we don't ever hear you complain. Because they're bitching about the mission and how stupid it is and all this stuff, needle in the haystack. And he's like, I don't complain to you. I complain up.
Yeah.
You complain to me, I complain up. I don't complain to you.
Right.
And that's the most basic element of leadership.
Yeah.
And it's so that it would need to be explained to someone who runs a major college football program is extraordinary.
It is, and it adds to the narrative right now that he's in over his head. And we see that on the field a lot. And maybe that's my biggest surprise. I thought there would be some adjusting on the job, his second head coaching job after a couple years at Houston. But on some of this stuff, I thought that he was going to be able to adapt, and he just hasn't. And I think it started this summer, and now it kind of bleeds to where it is today. But, look, we're all hearing different stuff. I'm not sure how many more games he can lose, and I'm talking about this year for him to keep his job. In fact, I think it's at one or two.
I think it may be done.
Either way?
Yeah, I think people have had their fill. Look, if he does a Bad News Bears turnaround and Texas reels off, six victories
six in
a
row
or something,
yeah.
And we play in the conference title game and we play in a great bowl – look, all bets are off, right? You can't predict what's going on there. Something's happened. But that doesn't seem likely. And that doesn't seem even unlikely. It seems like it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
so,
I would think he's got to go 5-1, and I don't see that happening. I mean, you still have Kansas State, and I know Skylar Thompson, I think they said he's out for the year. So who knows who knows with them. But you still got Iowa State. I mean, Oklahoma State, there's still two or three losses if you're looking at the team right now ahead of them. And frankly, they should be 0-3 in conference play.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is you look at the Kansas States, you look at programs like that who are doing more with less. And you also, frankly, I actually got some grief because I was saying, like, hey, TCU is not very good. Because after they beat us, people were like, well, that's a good football team. They're probably going to play OU, or whoever they were saying, Oklahoma State for the conference title. And
no,
like,
they're not.
They're not any good.
No. No,
but
they're
Kansas
not.
Kansas State goes out and beats them. And they're to say that Kansas State is undermanned right now.
Oh, my God.
It's like, holy cow.
That guy's a damn good coach, Klieman. I know we're only in year two, but we're trying to figure out Wells and Klieman and the new characters in the conference. And you could feel it last year, but definitely this year. This guy can coach. And I'm not saying that a school like Texas should look at him. Maybe they should. But where he's at right now, that's a good fit.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And you look at guys like Matt Rhule, who obviously were hired at the same time as Herman. You see what he did with his program trajectory. And then – frankly, you look at what he's doing with the Carolina Panthers.
Pretty impressive.
Not talented.
No.
Like, Carolina ain't loaded. They don't have Christian McCaffrey, their best player, and they're 3-2. And they're not good, but that's an NFL football team that you better prepare for or they'll beat you.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, so, and Rule and Herman coming from the same conference too. That is that's going to be one you look back on and just think the parallels are pretty interesting.
It is very interesting, and so I guess the thing is, Texas fans are at an interesting crossroads. The Texas administration is at an interesting crossroads. Fundraising is obviously in peril. COVID has devastated the finances of the athletic department. It seemed that, you know, Herman would have job security simply based on that.
Yeah.
But I think the anger level and the urgency level is so high right now among some of the big cigars that there's just nothing off the table. I'll just say this. Things that 3 days ago you would have thought unthinkable to University of Texas are not just thinkable, but borderline likely.
Expand on that a little bit outside of Herman being gone, or is that just what you're talking about?
Herman being gone at a time when they don't have money for a buyout, right? Urban Meyer.
Yeah. I know. The whole Urban thing is, and we can get to that a little bit. Hey, I'm hearing, or I saw reports that the South End Zone project, that some of the money has already been pulled from that. Does Texas get into a spot where they've got to make this decision to keep money?
Look, you can, I mean, you could try to put it this way. Why would CDC and Hartzell and all the various Texas admins decide to take a stand now when they've been folding on everything related to the player dissatisfaction and Herman for the last 3 months?
Yeah.
So they're suddenly going to get tough with their alums and say, yeah, well, you guys beat it. We don't need you. We'll figure it out. We'll take out a giant loan, right? We'll fly to Newark and see if we can find a member of the Gambino family to put us up 15% compounded 10% every 6 weeks. But no, man, I mean, look, they're in the driver's seat right now. And that's, it's good in the sense that it's prompting action. It's bad in the sense that you don't want due diligence and common sense to be erased by this push and urgency for something to happen.
Yeah, and I don't think anything needs to happen this year. I mean, this is, at this point, already turning into a throwaway year. It was an odd year with the pandemic. Texas is different, though, than a lot of other schools where they could get a couple people to write a check. And I think one thing that needs to be remembered, that's not money that you're taking out of the reserve. That's money you're only going to get if you make a certain move that they want.
Correct. But I will say this. The portal, the free COVID year.
No, I didn't think about that. You're right. Yeah.
It's changed everything, Kevin.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to lose everything and all of a sudden, you know, because there is still some talent on this campus. It'd be nice if they got developed.
Well, and think about, forget 2021 recruiting and all that. I mean, obviously that's a factor, but I mean, you could lose the good players on the team.
Right.
Basically. Just out of sheer frustration. I mean, you could, if you just want to go down this little journey with me, you could plausibly have Sam Ehlinger taking snaps somewhere in 2021 at a Big Ten school.
I mentioned that last year as a possibility. One, I didn't think it was going to happen, but that was when they were trying to figure out the OC, and I took some shit for that. And I was like, look, I mean, I was just throwing that out there as a possibility. That could really be a possibility next year. You know, he's got to be as frustrated as anyone. Well, you know, if you didn't have someone lined up, if you've got someone lined up who's already coaching, then it may be a little bit of a different point. But if you've got someone lined up who's not coaching and maybe doing, I don't know, Fox pregame and postgame,
and talking about this all the time.
Oh God, I don't know if you caught some of the shots he took. You know, he took a couple weeks ago after TCU, and I got a lot of on social media. Got a lot of but Urban's just bitter. Urban's just bitter. You're right. You are right about that. But you know, sometimes we separate things too much, and you're like, well, because he's bitter, he can't be right. I think he was both. I think he was dead on what he said, and he was also throwing some jabs because he doesn't like Herman.
Oh, that's 100% right. Urban is a petty, vindictive guy, and he's also correct.
Yeah, right. So both those things can coexist.
True.
Quickly, do you want to get to Urban now, or do you want to get to that later? I mean, there's so many things to hit here. It's so macro. We got to some of the micro stuff. One thing I want to say about the BBs that you brought up, and that was obviously a Daryl Royal line, talking about how if you really use the variety of Texas fans and donors and all the people that care about the program, if you use them together and get them on the same page, it can be very powerful. If you don't, it can get very divided and become a really, really tough job. You know, one thing he never mentioned, neither did Mac when he would constantly quote that DKR quote, is you don't turn the box over and purposely put them on the ground. And that's what this summer kind of felt like, getting back to your leadership.
Yeah, I think there are just several fundamental failures of leadership. And I think it's larger than football. Obviously, it's societal. It's the inability to tell the truth about the world.
Yeah.
It's the inability to look someone squarely in the eyes and say, I hear your perspective. I understand your feelings. I understand your emotions.
Yeah.
And in fact, you're raising some very legitimate points on points X, Y, and Z. But here, here, and here, not only are you wrong, you're factually wrong.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change. And if you're not happy here, here's the transfer portal. Beat it.
Right. Yeah.
And no one's willing to be that bad guy, because you got Jay Hartzell politicking for a job. And if he'd done that at that time, there would have been a battle to say that this is some, oppressive figure. Right. And then you've got Herman, who is using some very short-term survival instincts to pander to his players in the thought that he can win the locker room. And that's never going to work. It's just not going to work. And you're just seeing fundamentally bad leadership at the University of Texas. And look, I was laughing, Kevin, because you and I were talking about the fundamental ahistoricity, the illiteracy, the stupidity of some of these protesters who are toppling statues of Grant,
yeah,
right?
I know.
Toppling statues of Abraham Lincoln.
Unbelievable.
Toppling statues.
Talk about
of
some irony.
All people who, I mean, these are just ignorant buffoons. The big controversy now, are you aware of what it is with Cleopatra?
No, I missed. Missed it. What?
So they're going to do a Cleopatra movie.
Okay.
And they are talking about casting, or they already casted Gal Gadot. Do you know who that is? The hot brunette chick in Wonder Woman?
I do not, but I've seen her. Okay.
Okay. She's super hot.
Yeah, she is.
Dark hair.
I wouldn't kick her out of bed.
Beautiful, good at, fine actress, whatever. She's hot.
Yeah.
And everyone's freaking out. Cleopatra should be a woman of color. Cleopatra was Egyptian, blah, 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 blah. Cleopatra was a Greek.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I knew you'd know.
She is a descendant of the Ptolemies, who were the part of the Ptolemy was essentially Alexander the Great's right-hand man and his invasion of the world.
Right.
When Alexander the Great decided he wanted to invade the world.
Yes.
And he left behind the rulers, the Ptolemies, in Egypt, and they ruled for hundreds of years.
Macedonian, right?
Macedonian, a Macedonian Greek.
Yeah.
So they're like, Cleopatra was a woman of color. Cleopatra was a Greek who didn't speak the local language.
you got to be careful trying to appease everyone who's so woke now.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to deliberately make myself stupid just to make you feel better. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm going to point out how the world works and reality and history and facts and just. This is data. I'm not interested in your perception of how it makes you feel. I don't care.
Well, if I remember the Wonder Woman chick that I've seen, she actually would fit that pretty well. At least, it would actually fit tone and all that.
Well, the historical Cleopatra was apparently not that attractive, but Caesar married her as a political reason to unite that portion of the Roman Empire. But what Cleopatra was, in fact, was extremely smart, canny, very manipulative woman, very sharp ruler for her day, who tried to play the angles and ultimately didn't work out. But, that's the truth of her. And by the way, if you want to cast an awesome actress who's black in her role, I don't care.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares?
I don't care. If you want to cast a black James Bond and he kicks ass,
go for it.
I don't care. It's cool. Bring it.
Right.
But don't talk to me about, don't, I'm not going to agree to your lies. I'm getting so fed up with it. And that's what a lot of this stuff is predicated on.
Yeah.
And it's a very childish view of history, which is to say you go back with knowledge of what we know now, and you go back and you judge the people 100, 200, 300, 500 years ago, and you say, oh, well, you didn't believe in gay marriage, Mr. Catholic Pope from the 8th century.
Right.
It's like, yeah, he
no,
didn't.
No
shit. By the way, he was probably gay if it was a Catholic Pope from the 8th century. but he couldn't say it publicly.
That is well done. You know what my biggest pet peeve on that is, we're going off the reservation a little bit here, but you know, with the pandemic and everything, the one thing that, and I think I've seen Marr talk about this, a couple people get on it a little bit, but the one thing, literally the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about is how fat and unhealthy this country is.
Yeah. 100%.
Like no one will bring that up. That is part of the cocktail here, okay?
Well, it's because you're fat shaming, Kevin.
Right, because I'm being mean when I'm talking about health.
Yeah, well, hey, what? You know what? I've been fat. I've been a fat guy. And you know what helped me? Getting shamed.
Getting shamed a little bit, yeah.
And then I got in really good shape. You have never been a true fat guy, but you've been out of shape. And what do you do? What happens when I see you and you're out of shape?
I usually go work out.
Yeah, because I tease you.
Yes. Yes, because we're friends, and it doesn't end our friendship. And I know at the end of the day, you care about me. And it's like, hey, man,
That's
you're
right.
kind of getting that gut. You been doing any arm stuff at all? I'll get my ass back in there. That's okay. And I think we've kind of lost that. And I guess bringing it back to the Texas football program, I don't feel like anyone can actually tell the truth. And they're too afraid. Herman got himself in trouble with all, you know, trying to play to the woke crowd, or not even that, trying to play to his players, and it backfired on him.
It absolutely backfired. And honestly, I think there's a larger inability to tell the truth. Now, it doesn't mean that I possess singularly the truth. Be very scared of people who think that.
Yeah.
But I can tell you things that are true that are counter to what everyone is telling you is true right now. And the way that I know that they're true is that they're verifiably true. They're facts.
They're facts, yeah.
And it's like Cleopatra being a Macedonian. It just is. And if that offends you, I don't care.
Right.
It's like, and deal with it.
And it is a fact that if you are, you know, if you're out of shape, or if you're fat or bigger or just unhealthy, that you're going to be more susceptible to COVID. Like, it's not trying to be mean. It's not wishing anything. It's just trying to have a realistic, factual conversation about something that we're all trying to figure out.
Well, here's the scarier thing, Kevin. Not only are you more susceptible to it, you're more likely to spread it.
Yeah.
Because those people are more likely to be symptomatic.
Oh, I thought you meant
people who are.
I thought that was maybe a buffet joke, but I got you.
Yeah, exactly. But no, seriously, so there are implications there. So the same people that would mask shame you because they feel that you're not
caring about
doing the small incremental thing that might take a percentage off the likelihood of spread, they are not the people that would also tell a very fat person, hey, since March, how many pounds have you lost if you're really scared about COVID?
Right. Or if you really care
because
about spreading it.
You're more likely to get it and suffer from it. You're more likely to spread it because you're unhealthy, you're more likely to be symptomatic. And symptomatic people are more likely than asymptomatics to spread.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
I think you're right. And Bill Maher, and by the way, Bill Maher says stuff I disagree with all the time, emphatically.
Yeah, I do too. And I've been watching him for 15 years, and people will think, there's something here. Sorry, there's another pet peeve. I've been watching him forever, right? I disagree with him all the time. Is it weird that I watch a show that I disagree with a lot? To me, that is, I don't know, that's healthy.
Well, increasingly, that's rare.
Okay.
Because you find people who are in information bubbles.
Yeah.
And the worst people are the people who believe they're highly informed. and it's who are not highly informed.
And there's just an echo chamber. But they continue to think they're getting informed.
Well, at least dumb, uninformed people will often say, like, hey, man, I don't follow any of that.
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's frustrating. You know what? It is nice to get the truth. It's nice when people will actually give you that. And it's really tough in the financial world. That's where David McClellan, he's our guy. I'm not sure he's going to love the transition. He probably will. Fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial, and he can really help you out. And the fiduciary part is important there. He is obligated by law to do what's right for you. He would do that anyway. Financial life coach, also very big into retirement planning. And with COVID-19, hell, I mean, so many things have changed. So make sure you take that free consultation. We've had multiple listeners that have done that, and they all gave a thumbs up. David can help you understand that financial freedom number. That is what we're all looking for. Maybe see some things that you could be doing differently to build your wealth and also achieve financial freedom a little bit faster. Give him a call. He's a national champion Texas swimmer. He's a great guy, and he is very smart. 312-933-8823. 312-933-8823 or D McClellan at forumfin.com. He'll be okay with that transition, right?
I think so, and I think he is a guy who's about truth and for people to find out the truth about their financial standing, right?
Yeah, that can be scary, but...
It can be scary, and it's intimidating. But you know what? When you've got someone really smart who can help you through that process and that journey, it becomes a lot more easy to deal with and a lot more palatable to handle that truth. And another truth that we can pass on is our other great sponsor. That's Gabe Winslow and his excellent mortgage team. A bunch of you smart folks picked up the phone and called Gabe last week and took advantage of his amazing OU offer. He still is running a great offer, which is the typical thing we always do, which is if you call in, he's going to give you $500 off your closing just by mentioning this podcast. And if you're someone who is in the market potentially for a new home, you obviously need to give Gabe a call. But if you already have a home and you've made a deal, and maybe even a recent deal, and your interest rate is at 3.5% or higher, give him a call. I think you would be shocked to find out that it would make sense for you to refi. I know that sounds crazy. He'll lay it out for you. See if there's an opportunity there for you to put some cash in your pocket, tens of thousands of dollars over the lifetime of your loan. That's at 832-557-1095. That's 832-557-1095. Tell them we sent you.
Yeah, and look, both are free, which is a great thing. So if it's going to work out with Gabe, like Paul said, you may be thinking, I'm not going to refinance. What are you, high? No, there are some people, well, we may be, but there's also some people that have thought that, and all of a sudden they get a much better deal. And then with David, it's a free consultation. Just see where you're at and go from there.
Absolutely. And you know, it's nuts. Gabe told me that he refied a guy who had a 3.375. happened to be the structure of the loan. I can't guarantee that to everyone.
Right.
But it just happened to be the structure of that guy's loan. He saved him a ton of money. And Gabe, like, contacted me dumbfounded that he was that he was able to do that. And it made sense. I mean, they both talked about it. They looked at the numbers and they're like, yeah, this makes obvious sense. So just give him a call. Give David a call. These are great sponsors. They're great supporters of EGAT. And all of you are great supporters of EGAT. If you enjoy the show, if you enjoy our ramblings, our uninformed ramblings mm-hmm. about the world and Texas sports and the sports world in general, go to iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review. If you're on Stitcher, do the same. But iTunes is the big daddy. That's the 800-pound gorilla. It has the most value and benefit for us. Please go there. Write your thoughts. Let us know what you think. Give us 5 stars and continue to support the podcast so we can give you great free content.
Not sure what you're doing this weekend, but I finally have a couple days off. I'll be off. So maybe if we want to do kind of a long one on Sunday and get back into it. We're already an hour in, man. I mean, this thing flew by. Obviously, a lot to talk about with Texas football. Anything you want to finish off with here?
I think we probably need to we may just have an entire show dedicated to Urban Meyer.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, we got a lot to unravel with that one.
Yeah.
Thank God he's not Macedonian.
He does have a pretty good tan working, though.
Well, he is a POC then.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Oh God. You know, it's funny. I've seen some of the people flip on that didn't want him at all. And look, I'm trying to like make a big turn here and be like, you know, Urban would be totally fine here. I think he'd win here. I think there's an argument to be had with some of the shit that he had off the field, specifically at Florida, but also at Ohio State. But I do find it funny. I mean, kind of this naive thought that a majority of the head coaches in college football or pro football or hell, almost any sport, that are actually really good at what they do are real clean choir boys.
Yeah. So it's one of these dichotomies, specific also to football and high level, high powered football. But we want these head coaches to be the mayor of burnt orange. We want them to be sort of like our combination granddaddy boyfriend, right?
Right.
And at the same time, we want them to be merciless, cold-eyed killers.
Yeah.
Who want nothing more than to destroy the opponent, do anything to win, and go 14-0.
Yeah.
So you've got to find out where your line in the sand is. And I can tell you, just like Kevin says, a lot of lines in the sand have shifted in the last couple of days for Texas fans.
It's one of the great things.
It's hilarious. And I'm not judging these folks at all.
No, I'm not either.
The rationalizations that I'm seeing friends of mine make is hilarious.
Yeah,
I know. I'm just dying laughing. And these are the guys who would have told you 2 weeks ago, we can never hire this guy. This is Texas. We stand for something. And now they're like, I'm going all in on Urban, baby. And we need to get the boosters paying. We need to get a slush fund. We need to set it up like Alabama does with like 401ks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, Saban is, first off, he's not personality plus if you're looking for that. Although that's the last thing I'm looking for in a head coach. I couldn't give a shit if he gives a good press conference or that was a funny quote. You know, I don't care. But I obviously don't want them to be running what Urban was running in Gainesville, where we're worried about people being shot downtown on 6th Street by players in unmarked cars and shit like that.
You know, yeah.
I mean, there is a little balance there.
I'll say our minimum standard is we don't want the team to be a physical threat to the rest of the student body.
Right. Yeah. No, I'd be much cooler with the 401k set up and the investments that Alabama set up when Saban first got there. I mean, they told me before they hired Saban. In fact, Saban was actually at LSU. I was at an LSU-Alabama game, and I'm talking with some major Alabama donors, and they go, oh, you know, we're going to be back, and we figured it out, and we're going to get it all set up, and kind of walked me through it. One, how open they were about it was fascinating, but also I'd be much cooler with that than having rapist or murderers on campus. I know that's a big line for me to draw there.
Yeah, well, that was bold, Kevin. That's a bold stance.
I know. I'm a good guy, all right?
You know, David's a really good guy, but he also loves Texas and wants to win. We got to ask him if he would head up the slush fund.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, he'd be the perfect one managing it.
But would he do it? We got to find that out.
I don't think
him.
He would. No. He's
exactly,
he's too way too ethical to do that, which is good, which is why he's part of this for us, because we want you guys to have an ethical financial consultant or advisor. But
he's so good at it.
He's so good at it that, it'd be kind of nice if he would do it. But you know what? We'll find someone to do that, and we'll try and get that Urban Meyer podcast out for you maybe this weekend.
Yeah, well, we'll see. we may have a change of heart on that one.
That's a good point.
When we start doing our due diligence. But nonetheless, EGAT will be back. Thanks to you all for listening. Support our sponsors. Go support us on iTunes. Kevin, anything else you want to add to the people?
That's about it. You know, just remember there's a lot of other good things going on in life, and maybe not right now. You're dealing with a pandemic. People are dealing with money issues, job issues, and you just want your Saturday to have some Texas football. Go find something else. Don't get caught up in it too much 24/7. And at the end of the day, at some point, they're going to figure this shit out. At some point, they're going to hire someone because they have the resources who's going to come in here and win. I just don't think it's going to be Herman.
At the end of the day, Cleopatra was a Macedonian.
She was. And apparently not that hot, but really smart. Y'all have a good one. Peace, y'all.